in his master's degree at the Twente University in the Netherlands, and then his PhD at the University of Amsterdam, Center of Informatics, right? And the main point about Professor Van Herve is that his research is in the area of combinatorial optimization, math programming, and in particular also in constraint programming in hybrid methods, combining both CP and optimization techniques. And so he's been here at Carnegie Mellon, I think, only for, 2 years or so?
It's my third year.
Oh, third year is now. So at any rate, so one of the motivations for the seminar by Professor Van Herve is that when we discussed at the meeting last time in September about some of the applications, you know, there was great interest in terms of problems related to logistics of transportation, and so in particular problems related to vehicle routing. So today he'll be talking about constraint programming methods for vehicle routing. Okay. So, William, it's all yours. Thank you.
Thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here and an honor. I hope you can hear me out there. But they are muted, huh? So
yeah.
So let's get started. I inserted some slides, so I will mention that when I go to those slides.
I don't know why I'm this end here, actually.
You cannot hear me.
Sorry. Did you say you cannot hear?
Yes. Kind of quiet.
Well, maybe if you just speak into, just stay here, maybe. Sorry.
Okay, that's good. I'll shout. So today I'm going to talk about vehicle routing problems and constraint-based methods for vehicle routing. I was instructed to do that by Ignacio, so I will do that. Even though it is, well, maybe it is one of the applications that I've worked on, but it's not my core application yet. I'm still working on methods using constraint programming for vehicle routing, so I hope in the next year we will have a very, very nice method. Now I'm presenting older work and also current work with Michela Milano from the University of Bologna and Gianna Angunes. She's a PhD student here at Tepper. This is the outline of the talk. There will not be many proofs in this talk, approximately zero. I kept it high level and targeted to an audience that is not too familiar with constraint programming and wants to know how it can be applied to vehicle routing problems. So I show more modeling aspects, engineering aspects. So what can you get out of it? And at the end, I hope you know a little bit better what you can do in vehicle routing with constraint programming, what you cannot do. So the overview is, I will first briefly mention what is vehicle routing. You all know it, but I just have to, we have to be all on the same page. Then I will present to you what is constraint programming. Then I'll present, well, the basic vehicle routing problem is a traffic salesman problem when you have a single vehicle. So I will go over a constraint programming model for that case, and we will see that we can extend that to the vehicle routing problem for multiple vehicles. For the TSP with time windows, the traffic salesman problem with time windows, I present a basic model using constraint programming and a hybrid approach, and I show you experimental results. For the vehicle routing problem, I will mainly show you an overview of the model. It will be a bit complex, so I'll show you just some details to give you an idea, and also some experimental results. The vehicle routing application that I'm using is for the food bank here in Pittsburgh, and it's a very interesting application because it's a very non-standard vehicle routing problem. It has some interesting features, and it is very difficult to solve. It's very hard. And I'll finish with some conclusions. So let's get started with slide number 3. On four on the vehicle routing problems. The basic vehicle routing problem is a traveling salesman problem, and you are all familiar with the traveling salesman problem, I suppose. Now people call this the traveling salesperson problem. What's that?
Just a pointer, so you can stay perhaps closer to the.
Do have a pointer, but thanks.
Okay.
So in the traveling salesman problem, you are given a graph with nodes. They are locations that you wish to visit, and you wish to visit each location exactly once, and you have to find the shortest tour. Well, in practice, this exactly once restriction is actually a bit superfluous. You usually don't really care about that. I'm happy to visit a city twice if that gives me a shorter tour, but that's fine. This is fine. You can always convert your problem into a TSP in any way. So this is a very small example here. I give you here a graph with the weights on the arcs and on the edges. The weights correspond to distances typically. And here we have only 7 cities. Here's a slightly larger problem. It contains a little bit more than 71,000 cities. It comes from this website here on the left bottom side of the slide, from the TSP site. Does anyone have an idea what this is?
China.
Yes. How do you know? These are. This is a subset of 71,000 cities in China, and this is of course much much bigger than the slide than what we saw before. This very tiny graph on seven nodes. So finding it, you know, the traveling salesman problem is one of the hardest problems out there. It's an MP-hard problem. So being able to solve a problem like this, or even close to the Melody, 71,000 cities, maybe, you know, impossible. But we will see, if you look at the milestones on the next slide, slide number 5. This comes from the TSP book by Applegate and al. From 2007. I can really recommend that TSP book. Here you see the timeline from 1954 to a recent day, 2005, some of the milestones. Each of these milestones corresponds to new introduction of mathematical programming techniques, such as branch and bound, cutting planes, or branch and cut. And in 1987, branch and cut started, and then they made a big... They made a big leap from several hundred cities, 600 cities, to several thousand cities. Before that, it was either cutting planes or branch and bound. So this was the branch and cut. Leap in 1987. The branch and cut solvers were refined later, and the current record in 2005 is 85,000 cities, or almost 86,000 cities. So that is what you can solve nowadays if you have a huge network and if you have 136 years of CPU time. Then you can solve these problems to optimality if you're lucky, because these are, of course, each of these problems are have a specific structure, and if you're unlucky, then even with maybe 1,000 cities, you can still not solve the optimality. You can construct instances that are extremely difficult, yet there are instances that are very big and you can solve them optimally. And the best approach currently is a branch and cut approach, and also you use typically heuristics like the health carb heuristic, etc., to get initial tours. Now, and then you see here on the next slide, slide number 6, I left it out of the slides that I sent you by email, but I give you here the China TSP revisited. This is the almost optimal tour for the China TSP. So you see it's within, well, you cannot see it out there, but here we can see it's 0.024% of optimality. So it's extremely close to optimality, and I think it's if you look at the length, it's more than 8 digits. So this is within, let's say, on an 8-digit machine, this would be optimal. So here we can say this is an optimal tour. So you can, in fact, find optimal solutions to such enormous problems. Now let's make the problem a little bit more difficult. Let's start adding time windows. I'm at slide number 7. So here we have cities, they're blue dots, and each of them has a lower bound and upper bound, and that represents the lower bound of the time and the upper bound of the time which you have to serve this city. So if you this is for example a tour that respects those time windows, and I think it's also optimal. The green numbers are the distances. How much more difficult is this problem than a TSP? So I just add some time windows. Well, it's getting extremely more difficult. So the state of the art can solve up to 100 cities if you add time windows. Of course, there exist problems that are very easy. If the time windows are very large, you have a normal TSP, so you can just use your normal TSP code. If the time windows are a little bit more tight, you are in a you have some sort of scheduling problem on top of it, and then you have a big problem because your TSP software does not work anymore. So there's an enormous gap between the thousands and thousands of cities that you can solve optimally with the TSP, and if you add time windows or other side constraints that are of similar flavor, you can only handle up to 100 cities if you are lucky, because there are instances here that are only on 50 cities that are unsolved. Nobody knows the optimal solution. So these problems are much more difficult, and in practice, I don't know how many people have ever encountered a pure TSP before. I only know of one, that is the, if you have these chip design problems where you have to punch holes in a chip, that is, as far as I know, a pure TSP, and that's about the only one I know of. All other problems have side constraints in the real world. So you get immediately into this realm of scalability. So if you have a TSP, it's a traveling salesman problem with any with time windows that are with other side constraints that are a little bit non-trivial, you immediately go back from hundreds of thousands of cities to 100 cities maximally, if you're lucky. So that's bad news, because in real life, you can have maybe thousands of cities that you want to solve with time windows. So this is a difference between real-world problems with time windows and pure academic problems. Vehicle routing problems are, you can view them as multiple TSPs. So you have, I'm now at slide number 8, you have a depot usually, and from the depot you're going to, say, bring packages to customers. And the blue dots here are customers, and the numbers adjacent to each blue dot, 5, 6, 2, etc., they are the weights of the packages that you have to deliver. And your vehicles have typically a capacity, for example, 25 in this case. Now, you want to serve all of these customers in an optimal way, and you don't want to exceed the capacity of the trucks. And this could be a possible tour when you use 3 trucks to serve all the packages. So you will bring now all the packages from the depot to the customers, and you can return back to the depot. So there exist many, many variations to this problem. First, you can add time windows, naturally. You can sometimes split or the demand, so you can use multiple trucks to serve one customer. That becomes even harder then. Sometimes you have paired deliveries, so you have a pickup and delivery, you have to pick up somewhere and deliver it somewhere else. And all these variations can make it very, very difficult. So again, this is the scalability, solving these problems to optimality is very highly non-trivial and even more difficult than the traffic salesman problem with time window, which is a special case of this. So I would say you can solve problems up to 20 cities, maximally, to optimality. You know, that's a rough ballpark figure for the state of the art. Or maybe 30 or 40, but certainly not, well, 100 is already very, very difficult. So you see that these problems are very difficult to solve to optimality. So now I'm at slide 9. Some typical characteristics of vehicle routing problems is that they are large scale usually. Thousands of cities is not uncommon, for example, for a mail delivery or a FedEx route, for example. Usually there are time windows or other precedence relations involved. I want to visit this customer before visiting that customer. For example, because there may be stacking restrictions. You can imagine that you cannot stack everything on top of everything, so you have to take care of that. You have obviously capacity constraints on the vehicle. And this makes it very, very difficult to solve optimally. Now we're going to look into constraint programming models. Why are we going to do that? Well, first because I was asked to do that, and I'm very happy to do that, don't get me wrong, of course. The potential benefits for constraint programming are that you might be able to find a very natural problem representation for your vehicle routing problems, and in fact, you will see that this is the case. And also there are specific algorithms in constraint programming that are specific for scheduling problems and for combinatorial restrictions, such as these capacity constraints on the vehicles. And the scheduling aspects. And if your problem is not really a pure TSP, so it's not really an optimization problem, but rather a scheduling kind of problem, then these algorithms can be very effective, and then this can really pay off to use constraint programming to solve these problems optimally. So now I want to give a brief overview of constraint programming, because I was told that not everybody may know about it in full detail. So I'm now at slide number 11. Some of you know about constraint programming, so you can just ignore these slides. So constraint programming, like mathematical programming, is a way of solving and modeling also combinatorial optimization problems, and it has its origins in artificial intelligence, logic programming, and OR. Nowadays there are many solvers that are really, really very good. For example, iLog Solver, that has been recently bought by IBM, is, well, I think, the state-of-the-art solver nowadays. Eclipse is based on Prolog, it's owned by Cisco. ExpressCalis is from the Express guys, is also a very good solver. And Comet is a new solver from Dynadec. Pascal van Henterijk and Laurent Michel have developed that. I think it compares almost to iLog CP solver nowadays, and maybe that will become the state of the art in the coming years. I have very high hopes for the Comet solver. If you don't want to pay a lot of money for solvers, you can also download free solvers. G-Code is a very good one, Shoko also, and Minion is a little bit more restrictive, but it's also a good solver. They are for downloadable for free, and there are many more out there. And I want to know that G-Code and Shoko have been used for industrial applications, and G-Code, for example, you can use in your industry for free if you want to. Industrial applications of CP, there are many of them. Some highlights are the Hong Kong Airport gate allocation has been scheduled using CP. The Port of Singapore, the container scheduling has been done with CP. And these are enormously big projects. So there are thousands and thousands of flights going in here and containers being shipped in Singapore. And these are very, very difficult problems. And the benefit here mainly of CP is the scheduling aspects. Finally, the Edelman Award winning timetabling of the Dutch Railways, I think it was 2008 if I'm not mistaken, is also in part, they use constraint programming for that. So you see constraint programming can be very effective for industrial and large-scale applications as well. And on slide 12, I give a comparison with industry programming. Industry programming meaning branch and bound, branch and cut. Both industry programming and constraint programming use systematic search. In branch and bound and in linear programming, you typically solve a continuous problem, continuous relaxation of the problem, which can be expensive. Even though it is, of course, polytime solvable, it can still be somewhat expensive if you compare it to what constraint programming does on each search node. Constraint programming has very fast algorithms for individual constraints that can be interesting, that can be combinatorial constraints. We will see examples of that later. And that is done so cheaply that you can search many, many more search nodes than in linear programming. For example, it's not uncommon that in branch and cut approach or in linear programming, industry programming approach, search several hundreds of search tree nodes. While in CP, in constraint programming, thousands or millions of nodes is fine. You can search usually millions of nodes in, let's say, 5 minutes. But there's no I mean, that's because the inference we do on individual constraints is very, very fast, very efficient. So my final comment on this slide is that industry programming can be very suitable for optimization problems because you treat the problem as one big relaxation, and for optimization problems it can be very, very effective. And constraint programming can be very suitable for combinatorial problems such as scheduling problems because of the representation, the way we solve the problems, obviously. So some examples of modeling in constraint programming on slide 13. Your variables are actually represented explicitly, so you can have holes in the domains of the variables. So, for example, variable V ranges over the domain A, B, C, or D. You can also have continuous variables like Z here, it ranges in a continuous interval. Constraints can be arbitrary algebraic expressions. Variables can be used as subscripts, provided that, of course, the sizes of the array and the domain of the variable correspond. You can have logical relationships, you can have the algebraically built up these logical relationships. And lastly, and very importantly, you have these global constraints, combinatorial constraints, like all different and unary resource. The all different constraint says that the set of variables x1 to xn must take all pairwise different values. And the unary resource says that if I have n tasks with starting times start 1 up to start n and durations duration 1 to duration n, they cannot overlap on this one machine. So the unary resource says that these tasks 1 to n cannot overlap in time. And each of these global constraints that look a bit strange perhaps, they're very convenient to model your problem, and also they encapsulate powerful inference algorithms that are very efficient. So let's look at how these problems get solved with constraint programming. I have here a very small example with three constraints, three variables with corresponding domains. In principle, we enumerate all possible domain, all possible combinations of variables and values. We have a big search tree. But of course, we don't want to search this exponential search tree. We're going to use the individual constraints and infer if values can be removed from the domain values. For example, look at the first constraint, x1 greater than x2. From this, I can deduce that 2 and 3 cannot belong to the domain of x2. Because if I take 2 or 3 as a value for x2, I don't have a support for that in the domain of x1, because it will violate that constraint. So I can remove those values simply based on this individual constraint. Now we go to the next constraint. We cannot do any such inferences, and the third constraint also not. And then I have to branch, because I have not all singleton domains, so I branch. And I do another round of constraint propagation. That's what this is called. And I will now deduce that I, in fact, can remove all inconsistent values, because they are all values, because they are all inconsistent. And I already now can prune this entire subtree, and I have to go to the other branch. There I do another round of constraint propagation. For example, x1 is 2. By all different, I know that x3 must be 3, and then x2 must be 1 because of the second constraint. And then I immediately find my solution. So I only have one backtrack in this example. And the reasoning is done on individual constraints. So that's how CP solves these problems. That was a very quick introduction to constraint programming. No theory, just modeling examples and a basic idea of what the solver is doing. I hope you can still hear me. And now I'm going to the CP model for the traveling salesman problem with time windows. And I'm on slide number 19. So how can we use constraint programming to model the traveling salesman problem? So I'm now going to give you an overview of what people have been doing in the past. So the first models for the traveling salesman problem that are really effective are by Casso and Laburte, and further on by Peysson et al. And Focacci and others. They're 10 years old now, these models. Typically, you're using a path representation of your traveling salesman problem. So your traveling salesman problem starts somewhere. Let's say it starts in the depot. You split the depot in two nodes, the first node and the last node, 0 and n plus 1, and you have n cities that you want to visit on your tour. So now you want to find the Hamiltonian path from the 0 to n plus 1 node. So it's in fact, of course, you just open up the tour and you break the cycle and you make it into a Hamiltonian path. So why do we do that? So we do this because now we can conveniently represent this problem using the following variables and constraints. We use the variable next of I to represent the next city to visit after city I. The domain of that will be 1 up to n plus 1. And that's it. And in a package such as iLog Solver or Comet, you can find constraints that are called path. You give it those next variables, and this will make sure that you will find an Hamiltonian path from 0 to n plus 1 using all those next variables. Alternatively, there are also packages like the Eclipse Solver that uses the circuit constraint. Then you don't need to do this path. You don't have to make the path yourself. Then you can just give it the next variables in the circuit constraint and make sure there are no subtours. But internally, it will also use this path representation. Now, in addition, what people usually do is they apply also an all different constraint, a redundant constraint, to strengthen the model this on the next variables, because they all have to take different values, because, of course, you cannot visit a city more than once. And that usually gives you more inference and more propagation. And this together is enough to model the basic TSP structure. It's very, very concise and relatively easy to implement. Next, we're going to start to add the distances. In packages such as iLog, you use a transition function for that. Slide 20. And in this talk, I will denote that by Tij. That's the distance between the transition time between I and j. And we're going to model then the distance by a variable z. That's the total distance of the path. It has initial domain 0 and some upper bound that I can compute heuristically, or I know maybe an upper bound. And I have an auxiliary variable, cost of I, that represents the cost from city I, so the travel time from city I to the next city. So just one segment of my path. If I sum all the cost variables in my constraints, then z equals the sum of the cost variables. And so this is a correct constraint, so this correctly now represents my total tour length. And now I just have to make sure that if I'm going to visit the jth city after I, so next I equals j, this implies that the cost of I equals tij. You can either use this this arrow, you have these operators, the imply operator in iLog Solver, for example. You can also use an element constraint, and that's a specific construct in constraint programming that you can use. But the second constraint can be handled efficiently in constraint programming solvers. And you can almost model this as is in a constraint programming solver. An alternative to this way of representing the cost or the distances is to embed this structure into the path constraint. So you have then a weighted path, and I will show you that later how you can do that. And then you don't need these constraints anymore because everything is encapsulated in the path constraint. Now let's add those time windows. So we have for each city, or I'm slide number 21, we have a time window AI and BI, the lower and upper bound for the time in which we have to visit this city. Well, then we introduce a start variable, start of I. Still, we have these cost variables. And the time windows can be very simply stated as AI less than or equal to start I, less than or equal to BI. This should be an I here. And now we have to make sure I cannot overlap my visits in cities. So if I visit J after I, so next I equals J, That means that the start of J is right after the start of I plus the duration of I plus the distance I took to take I take from going from I to J. So cost of I represents the time to travel from I to J. So this total is the end of the visiting I and going to J. So this condition says that if I'm going to serve J after I cannot overlap in time. So the starting time of J can start serving J only after I finished I and traveled to J. And these are in fact non-overlapping constraints. And in constraint programming, these non-overlapping constraints correspond to a unary resource on the vehicle. It's in terms with respect to time, and you can use this unary resource constraint for that. And I will show you later. I will show you how that works. And I did not put it on the slides before, but I'm now going to show you here in this audience a very small example how this unary resource constraint works. First slide number 22 you still have. This is the underlying scheduling model that we apply. A vehicle corresponds to a machine, if you're thinking about machine scheduling, and visiting a city corresponds to an activity or a job on the machine. You have to execute all activities on your machine in some order. What is the order that minimizes the makespan? The makespan is the last finish time of your schedule. So here I just gave a graphical representation. The ordering in terms of the vertical axis doesn't really matter, it's just a way of placing these on this slide. These bars are the time windows, and for example, maybe you can go from the depot to 1, to 2, to 3, to 4, to 5, and back to the depot. That could maybe be a feasible ordering in which everything is within its time window. So, how do we model the distances? Well, then we are talking about the sequence-dependent setup times in this scheduling problem. So, if I execute, for example, task 5 after task 3, then the setup time for task 5 is the distance from 3 to 5. And this is a common construct in scheduling. So now you map your TSP into a sequence-dependent setup time scheduling problem. And this is a well-known conversion. And here you want to minimize the makespan, which corresponds to the length of the path. And I want now to give you an idea what these powerful filtering algorithms are doing, because if you have this scheduling representation of your problem, then you can apply scheduling algorithms and the unary resource constraint. If you model your problem using the unary resource constraint, you can activate these filtering algorithms. And now my slide 23 for me. I inserted four more slides that you don't have, so I apologize for that. Here I show you the difference between disjunctions that model the non-overlapping conditions and the one unary resource constraint. I have three tasks, one machine. Every task takes three time ticks. Here's the time axis. And you want to find the earliest start and the latest end time for each task. So if we look at the different tasks, so I can do task one before task two, and two before one, and one before three, three before one, etc. So there's no way I can deduce anything if I just look pairwise at these tasks. I cannot deduce anything in terms of the earliest start time or latest end time if I look at them pairwise. But if I look at them all together, I can deduce that T1 and T2 at the earliest together finish at 6, and then there is no more room, or let me put it differently. If I push T1 and T2 all the way to the end, then I can still not fit T3 before them. So T3 cannot go before T1 and T2 together. So I must start T3 after T1 and T2 have finished. And I can order T1 and T2 in any way I want, and the earliest time they finish it is at 6, because the duration is both 3. So I can increase this earliest start time for T3. And then I can likewise say that T2 can, if I put that as far as possible to the end, it still must fit T3 there, so we can only go up to 7 in this case. So this is the reason. So the global constraint unary resource is able to capture this combinatorial aspect and to deduce this efficiently. In n log n time, you can do this filtering, one round of edge finding. And of course, this doesn't take into account the sequence-dependent setup times, and then you have to do some more involved algorithmic work. But these things are available in your solver usually. ILOC solver has these all available, so you can simply apply them. Now I'm back on schedule. For you, I'm on slide 23. So I'm now going to my slide is 27, so please subtract 4 slides from that. I'm now going into the hybrid approach. I told you before that you have this path constraint that models exactly the TSP, and you have a different way of modeling the cost structure, the distances. Now we're going to embed the distances, the cost structure, into the path constraint, and this is called the weighted path constraint, and in iLog it's called the path cost constraint, or cost path constraint. You give it your next variables. This next is an array of variables. The next variables, T is your distance matrix, or your transition matrix, and Z is your objective variable. This is, in fact, implemented in iLog Solver. It encapsulates a linear programming relaxation, and you can perform optimization-based domain filtering, and this in particular reduced cost-based filtering. I'm not going into the details here, because it's not the purpose of this talk. I am going to apply it later in the experiments. So this shows you that a global constraint can be also encapsulating optimization reasoning using, for example, linear relaxations. I am going to show you a little bit a different aspect of this. Namely, I'm going to use the linear programming relaxation and in fact a reduced cost to guide the search.
It's slide number 24.
So this slide 24, I will show you first what kind of linear relaxation we're going to use for the TSP, and how we're going to apply this to guide the search and to improve the bound reasoning. So we first map the CP variables, next I, to the linear programming variables, yij. Yij are continuous variables between 0 and 1. And on this slide, they are still integer. So if next I equals j, then yij is 1. And if next ij is not equal to j, then yij is 0. This is a straightforward mapping. So I'm going to create a shadow model, a linear programming model, within the weighted path constraint. And these yij variables, I'm going to apply this assignment problem relaxation for that. So that's here in this blue box. I assume you are familiar with the assignment problem. So for each node, V is a set of nodes. The inflow is 1 and the outflow is 1. That are those two constraints. And I minimize the weighted cost. So Cij times yij for all I and j. So what I do not have here are the subtour elimination constraints. So in fact, if you solve this assignment problem, you'll get an integer solution because it's a special flow problem. It's in fact a matching problem. But this contains subtours. This could contain subtours if you solve it. So what you can do is you can add subtour elimination constraints to this. If you add all of them, you will have a perfect model for the TSP, provided that yij are binary. Of course, you don't want to do that. And we want to maintain this assignment problem structure because we want to use this specialized algorithm that runs in order n cubed. That's the Hungarian method. It's also incremental. So in order n squared time, you can update your solution very quickly. And you can get reduced cost for free using this algorithm. That's the Hungarian method. And that's why you want to maintain the structure of the assignment problem. So we add those subtour elimination constraints, but we put them in the objective in a Lagrangian way. And that strengthens the relaxation. You can also choose not to do that, but if you do it, it really strengthens the relaxation. So that's what we're going to do. This is a valid relaxation for your problem, and you can use this to obtain a bound on your TSP. So what's now the idea for guiding the search? And I'm going to slide 25. I'm going to guide the search now using the reduced cost. So the reduced costs, you can use them, and they are already used in the weighted path constraints to do variable fixing, so reduced cost-based filtering. And I'm going to use them to guide the search because, you know, the reduced cost represents a marginal increase if you are going to assign a variable, if you're going to make the variable part of a solution. And if you have a low reduced cost, we assume it is more likely to be part of an optimal solution. Of course, this doesn't have to be true in all cases, but we simply assume it, and hopefully this will work. But this is a heuristic that we're going to apply. So what we're going to do, every variable next of I has a domain. We're going to partition the domain, or in fact split it, in a good and a bad domain. You know, the domain was 1 up to n, the cities are 1 up to n plus 1. If the corresponding yij variable has a reduced cost smaller than a certain threshold u, it has a low reduced cost, I assume that city could be part of an optimal solution, so I'm going to put it in a good domain. They are the low reduced costs. If the reduced cost is higher than the threshold, I'm going to put it in a bad domain because it's a very high reduced cost. If I choose to go to that city, I'm going to increase the objective so much that it may not be optimal. This is our heuristic splitting procedure for the for the domains of the next variables. So I have a good and a bad domain. So these are not single values; these are subsets of the domains. So the idea is that we're going to branch on that. And so if you of course first solve this relaxation, then you branch either on the good, first on the good and then on the bad domain. So this is our heuristic. And if you go to slide number 26, this is what you get. We're going to apply something called limited discrepancy search to this. Now, I don't know if you are familiar with limited discrepancy search. It is some kind of local search idea. What I want to do first, that's discrepancy zero, I have no discrepancy from my heuristic. That means in my upper tree, I'm going to branch on the good domains and the bad domains, and I first branch on all the good domains. So in this first sub-problem, all the domains are in the good, all the variables take their value in the good domains. In discrepancy 1, I allow one of them to go into the bad domain. In discrepancy I allow I of them to go in the bad domain. So that's our. So you have still, for fixed I, a polynomial number of those sub-problems, but you can increase the discrepancy, and all the way to discrepancy n, and all of them are in the bad domain. So this is a complete search tree, and we hope that the optimal solution will appear in discrepancy 0 or perhaps discrepancy 1. And it turns out in our experiments, almost always, the optimal solution, if you put the threshold correctly, the optimal solution is in the first subproblem. And it can be very small, and we can search it very, very efficiently. So within those subproblems, we of course use a normal search method that you can apply. Now the nice thing about this idea is that if you apply limited discrepancy search in this way and you split the domains like we do, you can improve the bounds at no cost almost, based on the reduced cost. If you look at the reduced cost corresponding to the bad domains, so you have n bad domains. If you take the smallest reduced cost in each bad domain and you order all of them, you know if you go out of discrepancy zero, at least one of them must go into the bad cost, so the minimum of them is the R1 in this case. That's a valid lower bound, and you can add that to your objective, to your lower bound. And in fact, you can add them additively by the structure of this limited discrepancy search tree. And you can add to your original lower bound all those ordered bad domains. Whenever you increase the discrepancy with one, you can add the next highest reduced cost. And you order these things just once at the root node, and then you get this bound for free. And this can be very, very effective, and can be so you can prove optimality sometimes very, very quickly, much more quickly than you would if you would not have this structure. So that's a nice feature. So how does this work in practice? Well, I have here on slide 27 a very small overview of what you can do with this. I compare here the Focaccio di Milano code and our code, which adds to the Focaccio di Milano code the reduced cost-based search guidance. The first three instances are pure TSP instances. You can see that with our method, with CP, we can actually solve larger problems. Although, of course, pure TSP solvers can do much, much better, but you know, CSPP is not the most suitable method yet for TSPs. But if you start adding time windows, that are the last four, RBG, etc., they are the Aschauer or Aschauer traffic sales problem with time windows instances. Here you can see that we can really benefit from it. So in terms of the backtracks, for example, the first one, RBG 034, from 13,000 backtracks, we go down to 36 only, so that's three orders of magnitude less. And for some of them, we don't do that much better because, for example, RBG 042, we have more backtracks, we could do it a little bit more efficiently. So these results are mixed, but you see that we can do we can handle relatively large problems up to size 50. On the next slide, slide number 28, I compare our method with two other methods. So our method is the CP, the Focaccio di Milano code, and the one with the reduced cost-based guidance of the search. The first one is Balazs and Simonetti. They use a dynamic programming model. The second one is Aschauer, Fischetti, and Grutschel. They use branch and cut. this is a big table. The first part, the RBG 021, shows you that only for 21 locations, the dynamic programming, for example, explodes for some reason. So this depends on the characteristic of the problem, of course. Whereas the CP method is very robust over these instances. Now look at the second one, second class, from 34 to, or 36 to 52 cities. These are very mixed. Sometimes the CP approach is very bad, cannot even solve it, for example, for RBG 041A, whereas the Balazs code does it in 24 seconds. So the characteristics of these problems are heavily influencing what approach you should take. So I cannot claim, I could show you a subset of these problems and only show you problems on which the CP method shines. And I can claim, well, CP is fantastic, it's the best approach that you can use. But I can also take a subset in which the dynamic programming or the branch and cut method shines. So there, the results are mixed. I cannot claim that any of these methods is the best, although I want to note in the last, on the bottom here, the largest one that was solved, the RBG 152, was by the dynamic programming approach. But yet, that may be, of course, in this case, the number of locations may not be the most important aspect of this problem. There may be other aspects that make it much more difficult for the other one. So this shows you how difficult these problems are. It's not simply a matter of scaling the number of locations. It's also a matter how do the time windows overlap, how tight are they, are there other side constraints, etc., etc. So you cannot say that one of these methods always outperforms the others. Yes, so I give you now on slide 29 a summary on the traffic system problem with time windows. So the benefits are we have a very natural problem representation. You cannot deny that, I hope. And it can be very effective. You can apply the scheduling algorithms for the unary resource constraints, for example. And also, you can embed optimization constraints. So CP is among the state of the art, but you know, it really depends on your own application, whether you want to use this or not. So now let's go to vehicle routing, and I wanted to show you the application of for the Pittsburgh Food Bank, and I'm now at slide 31. As you may know, a food bank collects food or buys it from gifts, from friends, and it distributes that food to needy people through agencies. So a food bank is like a warehouse. It does not itself distribute the goods to people. It has agencies, local agencies like shelters and soup kitchens that do the distribution. The warehouse, the food bank mainly is a warehouse that collects everything in bulk. The food bank in Pittsburgh is a multi-million dollar organization. It is huge. This picture here on the right is in fact the warehouse. It's only a small part of the warehouse of the Pittsburgh Food Bank. It's a huge organization. We focus here on a particular application in the food bank. It's a Three Rivers Table program where we collect excess food, so they are prepared meals from restaurants and supermarkets, for example. It has to be consumed on this day that you pick it up. For example, we start from the food bank and we pick up from the first green dot 7 units of food. We go to now to the minus 5, so we drop there 5 units of food. We still have 2 in our truck. We go to the next one, we collect 6, we have now 8. We collect 4, we have 12. And we go to the last 2 cities and we collect the rest, the remainders to those shelters. That's the idea. So we have, for every day, we have to collect the food and distribute it at the same time on the along the path. How do you do that? We want to minimize the total route length, and we have 3 trucks at our disposal every day. A more detailed
capacity constraints.
Yeah, so I give you now a little bit more detail. This is the overview. This is a really obviously a vehicle routing problem. It's a bit of a strange one, but let's see. This is VRP with side constraints from slide 34. So it has 3 sub-problems, 33 even. Thanks. So first, what you have to do, and you have to do this for all the VRPs, for all the vehicle routing problems, you have to partition optimally the locations, which ones are going to be searched by which truck. Then for each partition, you have to solve the TSP. So they are, of course, already, this makes it already very difficult. But now also you have to take into account that you have to order the visits in such a way that you don't de-seed. I looked it up. It's not an official antonym of exceed, but people try to push this word deceit as an antonym for exceed. So I'm doing it. So you cannot go below 0, obviously, in the capacity of the truck. And the truck has the capacity. You cannot go over the capacity. In our case, the capacity is never exceeded almost. But of course, you have to make sure that you have enough in your truck to be able to deliver it. And this makes it extremely, extremely difficult. It was way harder than I originally thought. So some other aspects of this particular problem. Well, some of them have a time window, some of the locations, but there are not many. But that's bad because I like time windows. I want to use those scheduling constraints. But okay, that's weak. I cannot invent time windows. Trucks can only operate 8 hours a day. I have 3 trucks available. I cannot split the demand, so I cannot visit a restaurant or a supermarket more than once a day. And also, I don't want to deliver more than once to every shelter, every agency. And we have 130 locations. So from here, you already see I have no time windows. I have a more difficult problem than a standard TSP with time with the standard TSP. I have 130 locations, so we can forget about CP. And actually, any method cannot solve this optimally. I did not find it either. So this is not a teaser or so. But this is a very big problem, and we still have to solve it. So we wish to find an optimal weekly schedule, and or close to optimal, hopefully. So let's try to do that. So I'm not going to go over the literature review. You can read it yourself. So what we did, we applied... I'm now at slide 36. We applied a MIP solver and a CP solver to as an exact method and want to see how does it scale, how far are we away from these 130 locations. And also we looked into heuristic methods because we want to find something. For the MIP, we implemented a flow-based model and a delayed column generation model. It did not work out at all. It was very badly scaling. So I'm omitting it here. I don't say that no MIP approach works. Maybe a branch and cut approach does work, but we could not get it to work. So maybe a branch and cut could work here, but that is not what we wanted to do here. So we only focus on CP in this talk. On slide 37, I give you an idea of what kind of models you can use. Similarly to the traffic system problem with time windows, we can use special semantics for scheduling, like activities and resources, and we can actually extend the vocabulary that we saw for the earlier problem, the smaller problem, TSP with time windows, to this case. In CP Optimizer, the latest release of iLog, this is no longer supported, and they want you to use interval variables. I don't like them, but maybe they work well. In fact, we use CP Optimizer as well, and in fact, it performs okay. It actually does a good job. But in terms of modeling, I don't like that choice, but that's fine. On slide 38, I show you how you can augment a single vehicle to multiple vehicle. So what you will have in terms of the vocabularies, alternative resources, and in iLog you will have, this will be a particular semantic object you can use, alternative resource, and it goes in almost the same way as the first model. And every vehicle has 2 types of capacity or constraints. First, you have a unary resource constraint on the time that we had before. You cannot overlap 2 visits, of course, in time. And now we have a reservoir constraint. It's called reservoir in terms of the iLog vocabulary. This can be used to deplete and replenish the amount of items on the vehicle. So if you pick up or deliver your goods. So iLog has a specific tag for that. The reservoir semantics is exactly a vehicle that does this. So this is what we can use. And similar to what we saw before, visiting a location will become an activity with a start, an end, and a duration, etc. And again, this is the transition time. So we can, in fact, augment our earlier model, and now it will become a scheduling problem on multiple machines. And again, sequence dependent setup times aim to minimize the makespan. This is just some code to show you how that works. On 39, but I won't go into the details, but just for illustration. Now I want to show you a constraint-based local search model on slide 40. So again, we're going to use constraint programming or constraint programming model to formulate it. And the nice thing is that you can automatically, using iLog Dispatcher, for example, or Comet, infer neighborhoods, penalty functions, local search algorithms to do the local search operations. And that can be very, very convenient because you can separate the model from the search. I find it very elegant, and also it works here, as you will see. And the nice thing is you can base your neighborhood and penalty functions on the semantics of the variables and the constraints. And iLog Dispatcher, for example, uses these semantics specifically for vehicle routing problems, and it is able to give you local search methods specific to vehicle routing problems. So now we'll go to the next slide, slide 41. It has dispatcher, it has nodes, vehicles, and visits. And it's very similar to what we saw before, but it's a little bit different in terms of yet you have to give the nodes in terms of coordinates. It will use Euclidean distances. It will automatically compute them. Vehicles have dimensions, time, distance, and weight again. But they are specific, and you can... So there, this is really a class that you can use, and everything is already available. You can just take off the shelf what you want, how you want to model your problem. Again, we have unary resource with respect to time and the capacity with respect to the load. The visits are the activities. You have to specify a location, how much you pick up or deliver. There's a time window, and maybe other problem-specific constraints if you want. You can add as many constraints as you want, and they will be all checked when you perform the local search steps. That's very convenient. I'm now going to slide... I'm skipping slide 46, and I'm going to slide 40... Sorry, I'm going now to 43. The solution approach for dispatcher and for constraint-based local search, and dispatcher uses this. You first generate an initial feasible solution. This can already be difficult. In our case, it will not be difficult because we have a starting solution. And if you don't have a starting solution, this, for us, the nearest addition heuristic worked very well. And then you perform standard local search methods for TSP, like, for example, two-opt, or-opt, and all these relocate, ILO cross, ILO exchange neighborhoods, etc. And we are going to apply all of these in sequence, and we will see how fast that goes and what it can do. And these are all built-in algorithms, these local search steps and neighborhoods, but that's very convenient for us. Here are some examples on slide 44 and 45 of these neighborhoods. Either it is within one route, or it is in the next slide, 45, you can see that you can... For example, in the first one, you can move this visit to that route, for example. Or you can change the end of the route, you can swap that. Or you can change segments. These are known neighborhoods and local search moves for vehicle routing problems, and dispatcher has them all. Or you can implement your own if you want. So you can also augment the library. Now, we have some experimental results on slide 46. We know the data for the supply. We know exactly how much everybody, on average, supplies. The demand data is based on the population size. We know how many people are being served, and we compute exact distances. I give you some small instances and larger instances all the way to the 1 week schedule. So let's first go to the smaller instances on slide 47. This is for a single vehicle, and this mainly serves to compare the exact CP approach to the heuristic constraint-based local search approach. The numbers here are, of course, the number of locations, and here are the savings, the cost savings with respect to the current schedule. So they have a very good schedule already. They are operating based on that schedule now, and we can improve their schedule up to 16% for the exact solution. These are optimal savings, and here are our heuristic results. So the scheduler, the optimal solver, is able to do this up to, say, 18 locations within a couple of minutes. If you scale this up to 20 locations, 22, it has a hard time already. But then you also don't fit it anymore on the truck because you go over the 8-hour limit for the time. If you go to 2 trucks, CP dies in that sense. The heuristic is still doing a good job with respect to the optimal savings, and it does it very fast. Within 1 second, you have these numbers. And let's look at some larger problems and all the way to the entire schedule. CP is not able to solve anything with 2 trucks and 30 locations, say, and higher. Up to, say, 25 locations, it is doable, but then it dies. That means the default CP. But there may be ways to get it to work, but we did not go there because we just wanted to take an off-the-shelf approach. The heuristic solver is doing a very good job. It can handle the 130 locations. It saves it 10%, which is a significant amount in terms of logistics. And it does so in 1 second. And that's very, very fast. So I think this is a very, very good message. You can solve large problems to some extent. Maybe this is not optimal, but at least you can find something good. Because we did not feed it the initial schedule. This is based on the initial solution found by the dispatcher, and then it improved it further. So if you are working in a food bank, and you don't know yet your schedule, you could use this. to generate your schedule. This is not relying on the initial schedule. That's important. Because what we're going to do next, we're going to wrap the most important local search moves into an Excel spreadsheet with an Excel interface so that people from food banks, in fact, can run this on their own without having to pay $1,000 to iLog. Okay, I skipped that. So I give you a brief summary on slide number 49. Once again, the benefits here are the natural problem representation, both for the constraint programming model for VRPs and the dispatcher model, the constraint-based local search. And I think what's very elegant that local search, you can add constraints without changing the local search moves, and it's you separate the modeling from the solving, and I like that very much. Of course, there are scalability issues here for our problem. This is a very difficult problem for us. So only small problems we can solve optimally, but the constraint-based local search or local search in itself can solve pretty big instances. Okay, to wrap up, on slide 50, I think as a conclusion I can say the following. If you have a pure TSP problem, you can easily solve thousands of locations optimally in, let's say, 10 minutes perhaps. Well, maybe that's already maybe a couple hours. But this is doable. But if you add side constraints like time windows, this becomes much more difficult. And your scalability of state-of-the-art optimal solvers is 100 locations or less, if you're lucky. And VRPs, vehicle routing, can be even harder. So if you want to solve these problems optimally, I would say you can forget it, typically. If you still want to use TP, you can use, of course, hybrid methods. You don't have to solve the optimality. You can still use hybrids, hybrid local search and constraint programming, for example. Or you can just use constraint-based local search or local search as itself. The benefits of CP models, in my opinion, are the natural problem description, the separation between model and search, which I like. There are powerful algorithms for scheduling, for example, and other combinatorial constraints. And for many of these problems, like the TSP with time windows, this is a competitive approach to solving it optimally. And for a local search, you can also use these CP models to handle large-scale problems. Finally, once again, I cannot stress enough, I think, the difficulty of these problems relies very much not only on the scale of the number of locations, but on the inherent characteristics of your problem. How do the time windows overlap? Are there precedence relations and other aspects of the problem? Maybe the geographic locations, etc., etc. Sometimes your problem is more an optimization problem, sometimes it has a flavor of scheduling, so your what kind of problem you want to use depends on your problem instance. And with that, I will finish, and I thank you for your attention.
Okay, thank you. Let's see. Are there any questions out there?
Ignacio, could you send out the updated slide deck?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And watch it?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. We will do that, okay?
Sure.
Any... maybe one question I do have is the following. So when you add the time windows, capacities on the trucks and things like that, I would think it's very easy to create instances where there's no feasible solutions. Is there a way to obtain at least, you know, solutions that minimize violations of constraints?
I think what you can do in local search, you can minimize these violations. Dispatcher, I don't know if it has that actually, because we did not need it here, because our problem was naturally satisfiable.
Right.
It is an important issue in constraint programming in general. Over-constrained problems are not handled too well. So now in the recent, let's say, 5 to 10 years, the last 5 or 10 years, people worked on soft global constraints, for example, where you augment, like, the unary resource constraints or cumulative constraints. You augment it to soft versions, soft variants, and you apply similar methods to handle them. Packages like iLog does not implement that, doesn't offer it, but I have it, and other people have it. People implement that themselves. But the theory is there. You can go out. I recently wrote a chapter on that. I have a tutorial on my website that shows what soft global constraints are, and you can take those algorithms and implement them yourself if you want. But it's not yet embedded in the CP solvers.
Okay,
but Comat is going to do it in the next release.
Okay, great. Thank you. So is there any question out there? So what about here? No question? Okay. Let me, since we're a little bit over time, maybe again, you know, thank very much Willem van Heuf for a very nice presentation.
You're welcome.
And, I was also going to make a short announcement, which is that it's very likely